This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town. Offshore investments feature.
Well, Mark Wertman, CEO of Unum Capital, is on the line to talk about this portfolio that we've put together. Mark, always great to chat to you. And for listeners who want to go and have a listen to the podcast, go and have a look at the information and the trade ideas that you share, they can go to trade1027.co.za, and it's all over there. I believe you hosted your morning prayers, your investment committee meeting this morning. What's your macro take?
So it felt like we finally got back to work today after the U.S. public holiday yesterday. So start of the day with an investment committee, and, of course, the first thing you've got to decide is what's your forecast for the year. And I think we tend to – we're fairly bullish. We think this U.S. market's still got sort of more run or more legs in it, and I think sort of our feeling is 10 to 12% is still left in the tank for the rest of the year. So 2% up so far this year. And probably with another 10 or 12% to go.
Yeah, and that's certainly what we've heard from the likes of Investec. I see Barron's as well, the cover story this week, very bullish, making the case of why the Dow won't stop at 30,000. Why is that, though? What gives you so much confidence that we've still got more in the tank in this very long-in-the-tooth U.S. market?
So many years ago, I used to write an article called Investment Mythbusters, and it was based on, do you remember those two characters who used to go on TV and they used to bust myths? And there's a lot of stuff in the industry that some of it works, some of it doesn't work. But there's three that people watch in January, which is quite interesting. You know, we've all heard of the Santa Claus rally, which is typically the run-up at the end of December and the first 2 days of trading, and that normally gives you a feeling how the year's going to go. And so far, Santa Claus rally, box ticked. That looks good.
Yeah.
Then the next one is called the first 5 days, which is how the first 5 days of January starts is normally how January goes. Tick that box. We're 2% up so far for the year, so that one's ticked. And the last one that always gets rolled out is called the January barometer, which is not the January effect. Stocks tend to go up in January with the January effect, but the January barometer says, so like January, so like the rest of the year. Now, January's not finished, so we might have a sell-off from here, but we're up for January. So typically, if you get the triple, what they call the triple sweep, and people have gone and statistically tested this over all the years. So if you get the triple sweep, you have a 90% chance that that year will be an up year. And not the quantum of up, just up. So if you, I mean, take it with a pinch of salt. It's a bit of fun. But typically, if you get those three sort of January predictors, you're in for a reasonably good year.
Well, you've got 9-1 odds on that being exactly what happens. Those are pretty good odds. We've also had a recent example of the so-called cross-market holiday effect here on the JSE.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is Monday mornings when the US is closed. It's just putrid. And typically volumes are somewhere between sort of 50-60% of what they are, both on the local markets and in Europe when the US is closed. But I went and had a look at it this morning, and there's some of those stocks that the market tends to drift. It's called the cross-market holiday effect, as you said. When the US is closed, other markets tend to drift lower on lower volumes. And yesterday we also had this sort of Chinese virus outbreak and bit of concern. So we had the market come off yesterday. Now, what it's shown is on those opportunities, there's some good research into this that says on those days, maybe if you're going to buy a stock, buy it on those days because you could probably get it sort of 1%, slightly less than 1% off where you, at a better price. So it's one to keep in mind. Remember, we are trying to teach the listeners some tricks on if you're going to buy a stock, how to maybe shave a percent or two off your entry level.
And, you know, ex-divi as well, sometimes that tends to overcorrect a little bit. So, yeah, it is all about entry points, as well as being in the market for a long enough time as well. Time in the market rather than timing the market, but that's very interesting advice, that, Mark. What's your ETF for the week? I know we do this actively, but you use passive building blocks as well. What's your ETF for the week?
So I like what you said there about time in the market versus timing the market. Now, I'm naturally a trader, so I like to time the market, but really it's about being in the market sometimes. And there's a great little quote, Howard Marks from Oaktree Capital rolled this one out last week, which says, if you don't have a manager with exceptional skill, then just buy the index. And I agree with that. If there's certain things that you want to accumulate and you can't find someone who's going to beat, and only 40% of active managers beat the index, so sometimes just buy the index. So I've got three ETFs on my watch list for this week. I'm actually buying these into the portfolio. I think we need to own the S&P. I've said I think there's 10 to 12% for the year. There's this big push in Davos today about, you know, ESG, sustainability, that all the companies, all these capitalists are standing up and being socialists and talking about the environment and people and all sorts of wonderful things. So let's join in. Let's, instead of just buying the S&P 500, I'm going to buy the SUSA, which is the MSCI ESG Select ETF. That's going in at market. I've bought it for our portfolio. The other one, and unfortunately we didn't get to this last week, we ran out of time, but I wanted to buy marijuana last week. Well, I wanted to buy the marijuana ETF last week. And we missed it, unfortunately. And my entry price was 16. So today, unfortunately, we have to pay up. We've got to pay 18. But this is an ETF that's off its highs of $45, so I don't think that's too bad. I think we'll add a little bit of marijuana into the portfolio for, and then the other one I want to add back in is I think the IPOs are gonna be hot again this year. I mean, they went through a bit of a lull last year, as you know. So we're gonna put that IPO ETF back in. So that's three ETFs that I'm putting in today into the portfolio. So it's SUSA, it's MJ, which is the marijuana one, and it's the IPO ETF. So quite, Three to put in the portfolio.
And the S&P 500 ESG index, we're going to be talking about this on the panel, the fact that ESG is the big theme. Thank goodness it isn't the fourth industrial revolution, or did crop up a few times. Gosh, I'm sick of that buzzword. how do they sort out responsible companies according to the ESG index on that S&P 500? We know BlackRock and Larry Fink recently came out and said, well, that's it. They're making it front and central of their business model before they invest in companies. Is that the sort of thing that this index will weed out, those companies that are really committed to ESG versus those that really don't do anything much?
So kind of amusingly, the ESG index, so there's a great ETF database that you can use. It's called ETFDB, where you can go and look up any exchange-traded fund or an exchange-traded note. And when you put the S&P ESG index into it, it only gets about a 60-70% score. So it's got a couple of naughty guys still in there. So, but on that same database, you can go in there, and I think there's about 30-40 factors that they look at. And you can actually go in there and look at, you know, clean water and all these sort of things that they're scoring companies on nowadays. So interesting if listeners just go to have a look at some of these ETFs and have a look at the factors that they're measuring on. But a broad-based one, unfortunately, like the S&P or the MSCI ESG index, is not that clean. It's about 60-70%, but I suppose it's better than naught. And it does tend to slightly outperform at the moment. So we're buying it for performance and because we're good guys.
Well, it might upset Greta Thunberg, but it certainly will be good enough for those who are more pragmatic and realistic about the pace of change. Now, we're also about to find out what happened when Netflix went toe-to-toe with Disney Plus. Where's your money?
You know, me and Robbie P in our office, we're always, I'm a Netflix guy, he's a Disney guy. We've had this debate quite a lot. I'm waiting the numbers on out yet. The options market's pricing in an 8% move either way on earnings. So that's a massive move. I'm not a buyer here. I'm going to wait. I think Netflix has done a lot, as we know. If I can get Netflix on a pullback on these numbers, I think they're going to probably disappoint a little bit on these numbers. So if we can get Netflix to pull back to, let's say around about 300, I'm going to buy it. I think it may take a bit of pressure from all these sort of Disney and all these new entrants into the sort of content. So on a pullback to 300, I'm in. I'm not going to go chasing after it on these earnings.
Yeah, as we know, if anyone watches Netflix religiously, all of the Disney content is slowly being removed from Netflix's offering. And the streaming wars are one of the big trends that The Economist picked up in the December issue as well. That's obviously going to hot up. We have been in Netflix several times over the last year, and it's been an interesting one for us. Speak to us about some portfolio trades here. What have you picked up?
So my hard-working analyst puts out trades for me every week on offshore stocks, and so I must give credit to Lester. I've got a couple of trades here that, look, Fiverr is a site that I use, and I don't know if you've ever used it, but, I mean, the name comes literally, you can buy software development at $5. Not that I've ever managed to get anything at $5 on the site, but, I mean, it is a good software development site. It's one of those ones that sort of IPO popped massively to 45, you know, I like these IPOs that halve in value. I think we should have a show just on IPOs that came in and then went 50% down within the first year. I think then you buy them.
And made the investment bankers wealthy and all the early investors poor as children.
100%. Yeah, all the private equity guys who were in there before the IPO and then exited. So this is one of those ones that sort of came back 50% and it started to sort of work its way up technically. It's got a nice little trend in there. So it popped a little bit in the last week or two. I think on a pullback, we want to get in here. So we don't want to pay up more than, I've got a bid in the market, 24.70. I'm looking at the current price. I don't think we're going to get it. It's trading around about 27 at the moment. But on a pullback to 24.70, we'll add that into the portfolio.
Company here that I can't pronounce.
I can't pronounce it either. You know, so that's why I'll just call it by share code. Oh, XLNX is good enough for me. Use the share code. I mean, I just can't get my mouth around that name.
XLNX or something like that. I think if you're a causal speaker, you might say Nolix. But maybe not.
I can't click either. So it's a semiconductor. It's because it's in that space, it's very reliant on the 5G rollout. You know, I went and had a look at it. There's 7 bars on it. There's a target price of 111. Leicester likes it technically at around about 102 bucks. So I've got a bid in the market. I don't think I've been traded yet. So I have been traded actually. We got it at 101.85. It's trading there at the moment. So we're definitely in that one for listeners. So that's another stock we've put into the portfolio.
And then any short-term trade ideas we have to shift along?
Yeah, so commodities, natural gas has been under serious pressure. I think we're going to have a little punt on that gas here. The way you can trade that is if you're not going to trade the futures, if you're a normal equities trader, you can buy the ETF or the ETN on NatGas. It's called, surprisingly, UGAZ, UGAZ. I'm going to buy that at the market. I'm going to take a little punt on natural gas. I'm going to take a punt on Brent oil. I know it moved up. It's moving down. I think if we can get it on support at around about 62 bucks on Brent crude, once again, we're buying the ETF. So that's UWT. It's a 3x geared oil, so it does move a lot. It's actually down 9%, I think, for the day. It's 11% down for the day, so I'm buying it here. It's UWT and UGAS are my two trades on the commodities.
And then finally, we wanted to talk about cryptos last week, and cryptos really, they rocketed in 2018. 2019, a very volatile year. What are you expecting for cryptos this year?
So last week was the North American Bitcoin Conference down in Miami. Nobody sent me an invite. I didn't go. nobody wanted to fly me across. Look, I trade cryptos. I'm not one of these guys who buys and holds them. They actually have pushed up quite hard over the last week or two. We've got a couple of levels. Everybody always keeps asking me about cryptos. You know, that. So we always have levels. Leicester likes a pullback to 7,800 on Bitcoin. Me, I'd prefer to be accumulated at 7,000 to 7,200 on Bitcoin. For me, Bitcoin and Ethereum are there for trading. So I'm a buyer sort of lower down in 7,000s on Bitcoin, and we're a buyer sub 150 on Ethereum, but prefer 120, to be honest. And I think it could pull back there. And once again, if you've got profits on cryptos, take them. I'm not one of those people that has to buy and hold them forever.
And it is a trade that hasn't been awfully profitable for us. But at one stage, we were up 20%, I recall, last year. So not too bad. Mark Webman, CEO of Unum Capital, who's built a trading platform for us here on Classic Business. You can go to trade1027.co.za if you want any of those trade ideas or any of the links to the research that we chat about here on the show.